Today's episode of the City of Smack podcast on the City of Smack podcast network is a little bit different because this is the audio from an Instagram live that I recorded last week with 2018 Boston Marathon champion and two-time U.S. Olympic marathoner Des Linden. So many thanks to Brooks Running for setting that up. This was a lot of fun for many reasons. One, we get insight into how Des has been coping, just like the rest of us, with the uncertainty of not knowing when our next race is going to be. And two, we get to hear a different side to Des Linden. This is the Whiskey Aficionado. We sat down and had this entire conversation while sipping on three of her favorite whiskeys, and it will be very clear to you, I don't think I ate enough food before this, and I started to pay the price down the road and toward the end of the conversation. So if you're listening to this while you're running, you'll probably want to treat yourself to a drink after this. If you're at home, kick back, pour yourself something nice, and consider this a nice little bar conversation between Des and I. Hopefully I didn't embarrass myself too much, and if I did, I'm okay with it because I had a blast recording this. So without further ado, here is a nice little run happy hour with Des Linden. People usually introduce you by your running credentials, but you're pretty much going to be the whiskey aficionado and the expert when it comes to this conversation. But for those who don't know who Des is, and you've been living under a rock for a while, two-time Olympian, 2018 Boston Marathon champion, 2:25:55 PR, 12 fastest of all time. Des, you know, when all things considered, how are you doing? And where are you tuning in from?
Yeah, thanks for the intro. I can tell you looked up your stats on IAAF, who does not allow Boston time. That's, we can talk about that maybe. But I'm out in Michigan right now. So we're downstate is kind of how Michiganders refer to it, in Rochester Hills. We split time between there and Charlevoix. And I, much like everyone else, am trying to figure it out, next steps. Ooh. And kind of part of being down here is that there's just a little more going on and resources are a little bit better. And you don't have to fight for your groceries as much as up in Northern Michigan, just because a much smaller town out there. So we're hanging in, doing all right. How about you?
Good. I'm in Princeton, New Jersey right now. So it's funny that I ended up here. I'm born and raised in New York. Everyone who knows me knows I'm very much New York, but I ended up here with a couple teammates of mine where we came out for, you know, just to run on the trails out here. Two of them were wedding venue scouting, and then all of a sudden the news took a turn for the worse and we were just like, you know what, let's stay out here for a bit, but we didn't expect it to be 60 days. So yeah, it's been a while. It's almost the equivalent of two seasons of Survivor, but hanging in there, making the most of it and ready to soon hopefully return to New York because the news is getting a little bit better. But yeah, kind of in that similar same boat of just everyone's just in the state of limbo right now where running seems to be going well and it's just that there's no races really on the calendar like soon enough. So I mean, how have you been sort of dealing with that right now? It's just kind of like this is a really strange period because you just don't know when the next time you're going to race is.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just figuring it out as we go because like no one has a game plan for this. It's not something you're like, okay, just in case he's of a pandemic, you know, this is the way we usually attack it. So we're all figuring it out as we go, but it's about being pretty flexible and, you know, just being patient and thinking long term. I think a lot of people are trying to avoid getting too fit. Like you don't want to be really, really sharp and know that there's no races out there for a long time. But obviously you want to still do your job and not get too far away from fitness. So you know, I've seen people kind of refer to it as the 80-20, you know, just stay in shape, but not too fit, just out of that peak fitness. For me, this time of year, typically, I'm navigating spring marathon and I'm able to really just lock into that and like have 3 months where I just train. And then you come off of a spring marathon, and the next big thing is typically in the fall. So then it's like, all right, do the appearances, go do promotional stuff, go, you know, kind of check all of those boxes during that time. So this right now is like free time for me where I'm not getting on flights and I'm not like trying to figure out how I can fit running in. So I called my coach up early and I was like, let's have some fun and like really crack down right now and see if we can't get a little quicker or work on things that during this time of year we just get too far away from. And then, you know, if fall marathons happen, we'll switch gears. If not, we'll kind of reevaluate after a typical training block time. So we're playing it, you know, like training block by training block now, even if the races aren't at the end of it, just kind of getting ready for a hypothetical race.
We're getting a lot of complaints that there's not enough drinking so far. So I'm going to leave it to you, the expert. How should we get this started? Because I've got Woodford Reserve. I've got Booker's and Screwball. You're the expert. What should be the starter here?
So I sent over notes, just on my tasting notes. And, you know, they kind of teed these up for you with, like, parallels to my career. And if I were pairing these, you know, with my career, and these were kind of the ones I picked. So we're going to go with the Booker's first. And that's a beautiful bottle. It weighs.
Yeah, it's in a box. It's still in a box.
You got to get that out and pour that baby. So it's 127 proof. This is a cask or barrel strength bourbon. So that's on the heavy side. It's right out of it. They don't dilute it with water. And I kind of paired this to the early days of being a pro, where you're really just, you got to do the hard work. And it's not a really an entry level bourbon. If you can take some time and get to understand this and really put in the work with this one, you'll be able to appreciate all the other bourbons, because you'll notice right on the front, it's going to have a lot of burn. It's going to be spicy. You're going to feel that alcohol in it, all of those things. And if you can handle this one and you can start picking out the really great things about it, you can handle any bourbon from there on forward. So this is like the hard work, dedication, grinding away. And the first sip, Chris, what you're going to do is just take the sip and let it sit in your mouth. Really let it hang out in there and let it burn for a little bit. Cover your mouth, coat your mouth, and then swallow it down. And that's just to open things up. And then the next sip, well, you'll start tasting the flavors. And maybe if you can put in the work here on this one.
Wow. This is what you can tune in for. Wow.
So it's heat, right? That's some heat. And you can play around with these types and put some water in there, put some ice in there. People say, oh, like, why would you do that to this really nice bourbon? It just changes the flavors and brings some more things out. So it's not a wussified drink or anything like that. It just helps you ease into it and really get more characteristics out of a bourbon.
So I think kind of like when I was looking at your notes, this one is sort of like you grow to appreciate the process when it comes to it, right? And I was having a conversation actually just earlier with someone, just kind of about everyone doing like these virtual races and these time trials. And sort of it kind of brought me to the point of, this is what that is right now, I feel like. This is the process. Like, this is all we really have to enjoy, because the finish line isn't in sight when it comes to these races. And so kind of a question for you is, have you noticed, or like doing some sort of time trialing or these hard workouts, you know that you're not really able to flip that switch the entire way? There's something really special about a race environment. What is it about kind of an actual race that you're able to get into that race day mentality, and it makes a difference in performance? Like right now, I'm enjoying training, everything's going well, but when it comes to an actual race, it's just not the same when you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah, I mean, the race day is like, it's the reward, right? That's like what you put in all those hours for, and the hard segment sessions, and you get out the door in the morning when you want to hit snooze on the alarm and the whole thing. And so, like, as nerve-wracking as that is, you have to recognize why you're nervous, and it's because you care, right? You put in all this time and energy. And the training log, if it looks really good, it's almost like the better the training goes, you're almost a little more nervous heading into that race, because you have this incredible opportunity to showcase what you've been doing, particularly like marathons where your family doesn't get it. I'm like, oh, mom, I'm going to be a pro marathoner. Like, that's not real. you do, like, all the time. Like, you sit around, you run in the morning and, you know, read books and watch TV. You're like, no, I'm getting ready for this thing. And then you have your moment where you get to go and all eyes are on you, and it's a really cool opportunity to showcase what you've been doing. And it's just like that one day, that special day where you put on the shoes and it means a little bit more. And you know, obviously having eyeballs on the community around and watching makes you dig a little bit deeper. But it's all the hours that you've invested over that buildup that we can just dig a little deeper on those days.
When was it that you really kind of grew to appreciate sort of that process? Like, yeah, you've raced for a long time at this point, and every training block is different. But like, when was the first one that you could look back on it and be like, that was the most enjoyable 12 or 16 weeks that I had before a race?
Honestly, when I got into the marathon, you know, I liked training for 5 or 10 or on the track. You can have like those checkpoint races along the way where you go, okay, things are going in the right direction, or, you know, this wasn't great. But you can go back every couple of weeks and you know, try it again. Those marathon blocks, and the first one I did, I just ticked to it right away. It was like, every day matters. And, you know, I don't want to look back at the end of this and go, what if I had done a little bit more on this day, or, you know, pushed a little bit harder that day? Why did I take that day off when I was fine and I didn't need the rest? And so it all became a little bit more meaningful, partially because you're afraid of the distance. You know, you do that first marathon and it's so daunting. You're like, you got to respect that 26.2 miles. And then I came out of that, ran my first marathon, pretty unimpressive really, but qualified for the Olympic trials. And that consistency, that like week after week and that big block where you're uninterrupted and you're not kind of selling your soul for these races here and there, just totally paid off. And I just saw my fitness get so much better after that. You're like, well, you spent it all on this one race, but I came back off of it and was like, wow, I'm like, I got a ton better during that time and all the other races too. Like, that fitness just kind of builds on each other. So
is that what kind of like maybe gives you a little bit of sort of like hesitation, or it's not as fun to return to the track now? Because I mean, you've done it 2016 trials, you went, ran on the track there, but and now it's like the Olympics get postponed a year, so you have some time to get back on the track and give it another go and possibly make another Olympic run. But is the process just like not as fun, or how do you approach it?
I like track. I actually don't really mind it. And like, back in the day, I was like, I'm a miler, coach. Like, what are you doing putting me in the 5K? I'm never doing the 10K. So I enjoy it. I think as I age, I'm just not, that stuff starts to go the quickest and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm not that fast really. And I tend to be injury prone on the track. So it's also like, should I invest this much time on an event where I'm pretty average and it could take away from the thing I'm great at? But that's what I'm doing right now is track stuff. And it's kind of like, we're floating the idea, like maybe we'll see in a couple of weeks what I can do for an 8K. That might be an indicator, like, yeah, you can get back on the track in full swing and try to get a trials qualifier and maybe make a run there. Or maybe I'll get hurt next week and we'll be like, yeah, no, we're gonna scratch that. It's just different work. In when you have opportunities along the way, there's not that like one big special day. But when you have like a trials hanging out there, it's definitely a little more enticing.
You know, it's the way I work. I want a little headline grab. What is the percentage or the odds right now of you running track trials 2021?
I'm pretty low, dude. I mean, I'll have days where I'm like, okay, like that looks pretty good. I just haven't strung together enough that I'm like, I could run a decent 10K. And like timing wise, I don't know if we miss both a spring and a fall marathon this year, it's going to be tough to get away from that event for, I mean, you know, it's like the time crunch for my career is getting really tight. And so it's like, what's the most important things? And if it doesn't look like a sure thing to get into the trials, we won't even flirt around with it.
I remember one thing that you said before the New York City Marathon, because, you know, I think at that point you were still playing this game of playing with the media and not committing to the trials for the marathon at that point. You're taking it one race at a time. It was the fact that you don't, everyone kind of works in these blocks, you know, every 4 years, I'm gonna look forward to the trials, the next trials. And you said, at this point in your career, that's not the way you operate. You're taking it, you're working the reverse way, year by year. How does that change with the pandemic and with the trials, you know, having gone the way they were, and then the Olympics getting postponed?
Yeah, we were kind of thinking about that because all of a sudden you're like, well, it's really not that far away from the next trial. So, I mean, I think you kind of circle that tentatively. And then for me, it's going to be in the back of my mind, and I'll go one by one for the next couple marathons. And it's all predicated on how I recover and how my body holds up. It's, I don't I feel really good. Like, I feel very similar to how I've felt in the past. But my understanding is that when the wheels fall off due to age, like, they fall off super quickly. But you see Meb and Abdi and, you know, folks like that, and they haven't fallen off at all. So who knows when it'll happen or if, you know, it's going to be in 4 more years. But it's in the back of my mind right now, and we'll kind of piece things in.
I'm seeing some of the comments here saying, let's get more of the pup in the frame. So which dog is this?
This is Boston, and I have like a charger going on right here. And he
Oh,
wants to walk through it, which will be, then you'll see my ceiling and the whole thing. But he has understood this whole video screens thing and has wanted to get in every call. So
that's
sorry, I'm not like just weirdly having my hands down here. It's the dog. There he goes.
This one's also, it's getting much easier to drink as I've been going along.
Yeah, and it's like you start getting comfortable with it, and it does breathe a little bit. You let it air out, and then the rest will be like just sweet and delightful because you kind of did that hard work one up front.
What was your first, I guess, moment where you knew whiskey was the thing you really liked? And like, do you remember the first time you had it?
Probably shouldn't say it on this call. I don't want the cops to come knocking on the door and put me away for underage drinking. No, the first time we had probably like a really good glass was with Ryan, my husband, and he lived with a roommate named Ryan, and then we had a couple of other roommates. And his friend had been, you know, talking to his buddies at work about it. So we went to Costco, and it was like a random Sunday. We were buying like all this cool, like fun stuff, like, you know, bags of chips, salsa. Like, it looked like we were having a party. A PlayStation, like the Formula One wheel. And they were cruising the alcohol, and he was like, "Let's try this Knob Creek. Like, that sounds kind of cool." Like, DeCook, his roommate's always talking about bourbon. And we're putting in the cart, and this guy with like two kids in his cart rolls by, and you know, like diapers and all this adult stuff, and he was like, that looks like so much more fun. That was the buying experience. And then we got home and just like, you know, poured it out with our roommates and sat around talking about it, and like, yes, no one was trying to get blasted. It was just like, hey, let's like appreciate this bourbon. And then it kind of snowballed from there. It was like we all really enjoyed it, and the social component of it was really fun too, where you're sitting around like, hey, we can have like a conversation about this drink, but also just hang out. And yeah, that was
Because
it.
right now you have people who obviously are just like, oh, I want to be like Dez, and they've got the running down. The running part is simple. It's like you just get out there, put in the work, train, keep showing up. But then it's like, oh, you know what? I want to be like Dez. And when it comes to ordering at the bar, they start going for whiskey. For that person, what's the entrance point, and like kind of the way you would go about navigating and teaching that person of where to start?
I mean, cocktails are great. Like a good old fashioned, that's a great way to get in. It's got a little sugar in there, but not too much. And then Josh and I always talk about this because we're big coffee people. We like black coffee. Josh Cox, my agent, and we're like, you know, a bourbon soda is like the Americano of alcohol, of bourbon. So like soda water, of nice bourbon, and then like it dulls it out, and you start tasting the flavors, and it's an entryway, and then eventually you get to maybe just ice, maybe a splash of water, and then you're like, ah, neat's good. I'm good here. And that's like your espresso shot. So you go Americano and into espresso.
What's been the best post-race drink that you've had? I mean, I'm sure after you went Boston, like the first one after must have been like, I've earned this. So, but was it that one, or is there a particular race that you have in mind where that first drink afterwards was amazing?
That one was probably, I think we did a champagne toast there with like, you know, a bunch of people from John Hancock who are like so good to me over the years, and you know, those people watched me get so close in 2011, just like, ah, they're gutted for me. And then they kept inviting me back, which was awesome. And so it was them and some Brooks folks. And, you know, it's usually like a pretty, he's jumping on me now. It's like, all right, buddy, you can come up. He just wants to sit on the couch. I'm sorry, you guys. There. Okay. So it's kind of like a work atmosphere where you have like all these sponsors there. But even my family snuck in and we just ordered really nice champagne and had a toast, and like the drink was average, but the people were the best. So that was cool.
What about Olympics? I mean, 2012, different situation, injury, but yeah. 16.
16, I did a covert shoey with some really good friends. It was like we had this super sick, like the Hyperions that were done just for the games. And yeah, we did that. That was cool. And then some other people participated. And yeah, it was a really tight-knit group that was kind of in my corner. And so that was pretty special. Again, really bad champagne and bad beer in Rio. I don't think we actually really bought many nice drinks out there. It was like cold beers. It was just too hot.
And you're kind of like famous for like taking these vacations post-race that are just always like really cool to watch from afar on like Instagram. What was it for post-Rio and then like post-Boston? I mean, and sort of the celebration that carries on there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so fun because you put in so much time in effort, and then you know you're going to take 2 weeks off after that race, whether it goes great or horribly. You got to hang your shoes up for 2 weeks and get your feet back under you. So I use that time to go travel and not worry about, like, just throw the running shoes out. After Rio, it was a pretty easy flight to go from there down to Patagonia, into Bariloche in Argentina. Gorgeous place. It happened to be winter there, so ski season, but just really pretty. And everything down there was just decadent. Like, honestly, I picked the place because I had read an article one time called Me, Myself, and Ribeye. And it was like, this is a trip down to Argentina. We're going to go to Bariloche and eat the best steak in the world. And we had steak every day of the trip. And then like the chocolate down there, the red wine, like everything was so decadent. And it was just a super short trip because I think everything in our body was like too much. Like, we're shutting down soon. So that was really fun. And after Boston, it was just too busy. It was like New York, and then we were just a bunch of different cities for like really quick trips, all the way down to Vegas for the billboard thing, which we were kind of poking fun of the other day. It was like this private Post Malone concert at like 2 a.m. And it was me, Ryan, Josh, and his wife, Carrie. And we were kind of looking at each other at dinner like, you don't really want to go to this, do you? Like, we were all way too tired. It's like private Post Malone, but also I'm going to pick the bed. So that was fun.
Wait, so you did you get to meet Post Malone?
I did not. We sat fairly close to him. I mean, everyone was down there. I don't know if you've seen that really insane picture of Josh and Ryan with who was behind him? Lil Pump.
Lil Pump, right?
With back behind him.
Lil Pump, yeah.
He was like, yeah, he's like 12 years old, but he's got like a cup that's like full of lean for sure. You're like, somebody arrest that kid. All these changes.
I actually do want to ask, because I had this written down for like funny questions to ask later. From that, you know, that music award show that you went to, aside from like seeing Taylor Swift, being right next to her and all that, what are some other like cool, funny stories you have from that?
Honestly, it was really stressful for me because I was like so out of my element. I sat in like the green room area preparing, just like waiting for your turn to go on stage for probably like an hour and a half. And it was like the call room for a track meet where like everyone who's anyone is coming into this big meet. But it was like Kesha's sitting here and like Rebel Wilson's coming in reading her lines. And I'm sitting with Chloe Kim and, you know, just like a rotating cast of people. And they're just chatting each other up like, oh, are you going on tour? You know, are you going to go to this award show? And it was just like track and field, except that like I didn't know anyone. So it was super awkward. And I've never felt more old because like all those artists were so young. It was very strange. Funny story though, and I'm gonna pick on Ryan because I just saw him hanging out in the other room. He's like going in the elevator to go get lunch or something. They had like a lunch spread. He's going to get his lunch. Got some boxes. He's coming back up in the elevator. There's a guy next to him. He's got his like credential on. He's like, "Oh man, what are you doing here? How's things going?" Ryan's like, "Oh good. I'm just bringing my wife lunch. She's presenting later." He's like, "Oh cool. Yeah, I'm presenting too. I got to go look at my lines. I'm doing the Janet Jackson Award." And Ryan's like, "Oh yeah, cool man. Like, good luck. Whatever." Then he's watching the show and like now presenting the Janet Jackson Award, and Bruno Mars rolls out. He's like, "Hey, that's the guy from the elevator." Like, oh. It's pretty funny. That's like amazing. He was probably so relieved. Like, this guy's not gonna harass me.
All right, so I made it through the Bookers, and I mean, I kind of warned everyone on when I was teasing this. I was like, "This is gonna be me not being able to hold my liquor." But what's next? We've got Screwball, and we've got Woodford Reserve.
All right. Well, let's go with Screwball because I think that this kind of goes in the order of the career. And Josh Cox introduced us to the Screwball, which is not a traditional whiskey at all. I'm not sure it meets any.
No, it smells amazing.
But it's a peanut butter flavored whiskey. And it's, you know, it says to the misfits, black sheep, and screwballs. And if you want a gateway entry whiskey, this is your go-to. Tastes good standalone, is fantastic in a mixed drink, can get you in trouble, and it's nutty. Like when you taste it, it's very full of peanut butter and it's just downright nutty, which kind of reminds me of a lot of parts of my career. I think it reminds me a lot of college. This would be something nutty that I would overindulge in and maybe not train quite correctly in college. But also there's been a lot of, you know, rocky times where you're trying to navigate like what's next, like after an injury in 2012, or you break your femur and you're like, well, like, what am I supposed to do now? How do I take 6 months off? And, I kind of went both ways where I was like, this could be a cool time to do things I wouldn't typically do, stay out late, go crowd surf at a of Montreal show, stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, I should get serious because 2016 will be here before we know it. But definitely a nutty phase, and this thing is full of peanut butter nonsense. So, cheers.
How'd you find this one?
This was I was introed by Josh Cox because it's out of Oceanside, California, and he actually sent our bottles out. So, not what do you think?
All right, I'm gonna give it a taste. Also, this comment section is tearing me apart. And like for people asking if I ate something, I had I think ice cream right before this, so that this is gonna get fun.
The tactic, Chris, is to just talk more. Like I'm talking more so that I don't have to drink as much.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is delicious.
Dangerous. Careful.
Yeah, super dangerous. All right, so
when I put mine on ice, a nice ice cube there. It's a good way to drink it, but anything goes, and it's you don't have to add anything to it, but if you want to put like chocolate bitters, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Love it. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Wow. All right, so let's get nutty. What is the craziest thing you've done before Riz?
I would say that Boston 2018 pre-race presser was pretty nutty. We won't dig into that, but also we had the podcast.
Yeah, and 2 days before.
I was already kind of in hot water with a lot of people, just having a lot of opinions and not caring about talking about them. Just being upfront and honest. And then we had our podcast and I made this joke about watching I, Tonya and taking out the competition. And you guys tweeted it out. And I was like, oh dear God, take that down, please. Like, will you please do me a solid here? So, super nice about it. But that whole weekend was nutty. And I did so much. Like we did an event for Truly Spiked and Sparkling, like a hard seltzer back in 2018, which was way ahead of its time.
Yeah, it really was. Now that I think about it, like that's before the hard seltzer era really took off. Yeah.
We were on the front end of that. And so that was pretty fun, a little nutty. So that whole pregame was pretty wild.
I kind of want to unpack Boston, because it's like you've told the story countless times at this point. You've rewatched it a bunch of times. And I think the Fast Women newsletter pointed it out. Every single time you tell the story, somehow something new comes up. And so is there something still new from the Boston Marathon? Because I was going to go through it. I was like, all right, we can go through piece by piece, like what made that race and sort of like it's your fitness. That's probably been like talked about, you know, ad nauseum at this point. But the shoes, we know about the shoes. Is there anything special about anything else, like the socks or what else you wore, the choice of the jacket? Like what else went behind the scenes of that race?
There are so many stories. I could probably rattle stuff off for years, but the jacket I did talk about a little bit, but you give one set, like a jacket and a pair of sweats, to John Hancock like 2 days before to have at the finish line. So if you win the Boston Marathon, your stuff's in a bag, it's been uniform checked, you're good. And that jacket was a totally different weight than the jacket I ended up racing in. And it was just like pure crap luck that I picked, you know, the way I did. Went out to the start and I texted Ryan, my husband. I was like, do you think it's weird to start with this jacket? Like, is that a dumb idea? He's like, nah, just pitch it like after a mile or two. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's the right call. I don't think if I had the one in my bag, I'd even entertained that because it was so like, it was just thick, it was heavy, and it was like a waterproof one. So it was very, it was just luck and serendipitous that one was the one I had out there. The shoes is kind of funny because, you know, I put those on and a lot of people just like, they looked at them and they're like, what are those? You know, like no one had seen these before.
Well, did I tell you, I think I might've told you about like, kind of like in the, I might've texted Josh about it. It was, everyone was talking about, it's like, does she have blacked out shoes that are just like not the competition? And then it's like, no, I was like, that's absurd. Why would it, like, no one is dumb enough to do that. Yeah. And so it turns out it was just a really early prototype of a shoe. And it just so happened they were all black. But yeah, I mean, like, they were interesting on race day.
Yeah, I was standing and I made the decision last second to wear them. And I was standing, you know, they line you up like and stage you before they walk you out to the start. And an athlete came up to me from another brand and was like, are they like, what are those? You know? And I, you know, I just kind of smiled. And they're like, oh, is that the like Brooks version? Cause they're much closer. Is that the Brooks version of the 4%? And I was like, yeah, they're, you know, they're kind of getting into it without telling them too much. And they go, Nike's already on the 6%. F, like, are you kidding me? And that was like the last thing I was as I went to the start. I'm like, dang it. So we knew the race was on.
Were they so the sort of equivalent of blacked out versions of these?
That's the one. Yeah. And some of the changes are so funny. Like, flip them over. See, show the bottom there. There was a big, all that white stuff was like what pretty open in the very first version, and it would like be really kind of unstable. So they talk a lot about making those a little bit more stable. And they filled it in. It also catch rocks. So there was some strange.
And you, that you put it at this point, you're probably not allowed to talk too much about the ones you wore in Atlanta, though, right?
They've been pretty much announced. I believe they'll be coming out fairly soon. I think I've seen a few articles, a few write-ups about them. If you like the materials and the tempo, which I love, I think
these are my favorite. These are my favorite trainers. I've been running everything in these.
So when the Hyperion Elite 2 comes out, rush to get a pair. You'll love them.
Why is that? What's different about them?
The feeling of the tempo, but stacked in with the plate, it's amazing. Yeah. So that'll be, I mean, it's been announced and yeah, it's going to be a cool shoe. I really liked it. When they sent it to me, I did one workout and I was like, I texted Nikhil at Brooks and I said, holy F, this shoe is amazing. I almost feel like I'm cheating. And he just said, he makes money. Smiley's back, and I was like, this shoe's great. Like, it's so nice.
But do you have do you have a pair of these anywhere? These are the ones I'm working with right now.
Velcro.
Yep.
Addiction walkers?
Yeah, they're walkers.
I like those. I've never gotten into that. I probably should get a pair.
Best quarantine shoe out there.
Yeah. That's good.
What's the third one for these?
The third one? Well, you have, I couldn't get this to you because it's very limited, but you have a very classic Woodford Reserve, which is a great, great bourbon. If you want a classic, go to put it in your old fashioned, but also drink it straight. That's the one. If you get out to the Woodford Distillery and pull a bunch of friends together and drop a bunch of money, you can create your own edition. And that's
okay. Wow.
Championship selection. And
good flex.
Great Race out there had us out, and we picked this, which is a big process because you put a bunch of cask strength, barrel strength samples together, and you're blending them and you're mixing them and you're picking between all these amazing combinations. And you narrow it down to one. And this is what we got. And mine will taste quite different than yours. And Woodford's just so consistent. You're going to have a great glass. But this one is a little more kind of spring-like. And it's light, smooth, creamy. Has very citrus taste. A little bit of, you taste pineapple in there. It's just a nice glass. But you guys will never be able to judge me because you can't get it anymore.
See, I mean, that label with the Boston Marathon label is just the, I can't flex back. I was hoping that I would be able to do this from my apartment, and I've got a nice bottle of Yamazaki 12, I think it is. Okay. And that's what I was going to pull out and be like, all right, this is going to impress us. And then I think I'm pretty sure that when I did the distillery tour after running the Tokyo Marathon. I might have like put it on my Instagram story, and I was like, all right, am I doing this post-race thing right? Because that's the place to go. What is the coolest distillery you've been to?
That's, I believe, the only one.
Really?
Yeah, and we have to go to Kentucky and just like do the bourbon trail. Maybe I'll jump in on the race down there one of these days, because I think that'd be really fun. But yeah, that was such a cool experience, and I feel like I've fallen in love with Woodford just because of the nostalgia of being there and like knowing what the property looks like and being in all the rooms, and like you walk in with all the barrels and like you hear about the angel's share. It's the part that evaporates out of the barrel, smell it, and I don't know, just there's all these things that stuck with me from that experience. And you know, I don't know if I could see the other ones, if it would weigh that moment down or not, but yeah, I gotta do the whole trail one day.
I just tasted it, and I'm glad you threw me right into the fire with the Booker's first, because this one is just much easier to go down with. It's nice and smooth. Much better than the first one. The first one, like the reaction people got was priceless, I think.
I think what's super interesting is like the more you have that one, and like you said, you kind of adjusted to it. It's a work. It's like it's harsh, there's some burn, it tastes like leather and oak and it's charred and the whole thing, but you have it enough and you start to appreciate it and like sort of love that part about it.
I want to touch on some fun questions that have been but I need the definitive answer from you. Boston or New York, what is like the better?
I mean, I don't think anyone would be mad that I'm going to say Boston, because you know, I haven't been shy about my love for that race. I think New York's fantastic. It's really cool. It's an amazing race. Like, you're on the bridge and like you can take in, you have a moment because it's slow enough where you can take in those views, and it's really cool. Best way to see the city. But Boston has 123 years of history. And when you're on the course and you're running it and you think about the people that have covered the streets before in that same 26.2 miles and the stories where the breaks happen and the moves and where a temperature is a factor and the conditions, and you start weighing it all in, and it's it's hard to beat that amount of history. And it's not a knock on New York. It's just a pat on the back to Boston for being able to have that much of a story. And then you go there and you're in the results book, but you're also a part of history and you cover the same ground as your heroes. And I started out there as someone who was like, I'm running behind my heroes. Like Dina ran the first year I ran it. And it was like, I get to run like in her footsteps. This is amazing. And I always think about it that way. And cool that I was able to lead the charge one year, but it's always like, you're just a tiny part of a really big story. So.
I'm reading some of the questions in the comment section. What would you rank the three that we've had so far? Which one's first, second, and third?
I mean, I like the championship selection the best. I mean, I literally was in the selection process, so it's catered to my likes and dislikes. And then they're all super different. Like, I think Woodford's just so classic. Like, if you want an entry level go to, like, really nice bourbon, that's the middle spot. And then you want something wild, Screwball's it. And you want something tough but really rewarding when you figure it out, that's the Booker's for sure. I didn't answer the question.
I want to ask about no, that's great. What I want to ask about the quote with the Larry quote. After you said it and when it blew up, did you have any sort of like, I'm sorry, Larry, I didn't mean for you to become a meme.
Totally, 100%. Because Larry Eater's so nice. And I actually wish it had been Rosenblatt who asked the question, because that would have been way easier. I'm just used to picking on Larry's. And he was like the direct target. But in my defense, and I understand, like, okay, so all bourbon is whiskey, but all whiskey is not bourbon. If you're a journalist and you're writing, like, what is Judge Lyndon having after the race to celebrate? Whiskey doesn't really get you any closer to the truth, right? So you say, what type of whiskey are you having? But that doesn't really matter. That was like thought of that. It was really just a reaction to make fun of Larry Rosenblatt.
I want to go into some of your recent tweets. I think one of the most recent ones I saw was about this speedometer that was like set near your place. What's the goal there? Are you going to try and just like run a quick 400 and then just like clock out as high as you can in miles per hour? Is it a 100? What is the goal there?
So it's a little bit of like, you have to test when you get on the radar. So you kind of have to like work into it and see when you start registering. And then you have X amount of time from there until the end of the clock where you can run as many times as you need to register top speed. And it doesn't need to be for like any amount of time. It's just like, what's the highest number you can hit? And then you have to like figure out your efforts you want to put in. It's on an uphill, it's on a slight incline. I got up to 14 miles per hour, which is pretty pathetic. and then they moved it and they just put a real cop there. So I don't know.
Wait,
I
went away so what are your PRs at 200, 400, and I guess 800, I'm curious.
Yeah, so in a workout, like post-workout, we did like 200 meter sprints or whatever after the workout in college. And I know I did one in 29. That's like the only thing I really remember. So pretty unofficial, but I definitely hit 29. In college, in high school, I did a 4x4. It wasn't my own split. I had a couple coaches on it. In a 4x4 relay, 58.6. Surprising.
Wow.
People are blown away by that. Yeah. And then 800 in a double after 1500 the same day, a couple like an hour earlier, I ran 210 flat. So.
Were you one of those high school kids who was required, based off your talent, to run four events at state or like the city championship, whatever it was?
Yeah, dual meets, like weekend invitationals. I did the four events all the time. As a freshman in California, I qualified for the 800 meter final and the 1600 meter final. So that's like, in California, they don't do divisions. It's just one big race. It's pretty, like, actually fairly impressive.
Well, I've got my quarantine buddy here, Ryan. Ryan, just he's got a question for you because he's a big Buffalo Trace fan.
Okay.
Hey, what's going on, Dennis? So I'm was always more of a wine drinker. I found Buffalo Trace to be like an easy entry level one. If that's the taste profile, like what would you describe my taste profile as?
I don't think I've ever had Buffalo Trace. I might hold on.
It's really good.
I might have some.
I had a bad night with it.
I think it's similar to Woodford, but that's me guessing.
People in the comment section are saying Buffalo Trace.
It's a super classic. I'm gonna.
Wow, she's an airplane bottle.
That's so bad, right? I don't know where that came from. Hold on.
That means I have to finish.
There's going to be a little bit of cross contamination, but let's see what we can do here.
So this is first taste for you.
I've probably had it somewhere, but not often.
All right, we're getting a live rate and review.
I did go straight for the mini bottle, so we don't have
one. Des, I'll also have you know that the Brooks in the background are my Brooks shoes. I'm the one that has been crushing miles in them.
They look
a
little big.
I've got mine in my room right now, so it's not. He's not totally lying. I am wearing mine.
Smells nice.
All right, here is the official review.
Oh, it's like super light. It's a little bit of vanilla, maybe like really light cinnamon. I think it's like a classic go-to. It's like the Woodford family kind of.
Right, like I think I got into it because it's just an easy drinker. And yeah. I was like, at first I was like, oh, I don't really like whiskey. Like I'm a wine person. And then I turned 30 and was like, actually, I'm starting to develop a taste for this.
Yeah, this is not bad. I like it. No, that's good. I'm going to enjoy this. This will be my.
I'll let you guys finish up.
Yeah.
Des, I haven't been able to ask you the typical questions I usually ask at the end of my podcast.
All right.
So, first one is, what's the funniest drug testing story you have?
Oh, gosh. Honestly, there was like a time where we went to my friend's 40th birthday, which is kind of sad. And we were up super late, a lot of wine, got home at like 2 a.m, and my 1 hour window is 5 o'clock. And she rings the doorbell, and I'm like, well, like I can barely, like, it was a navigation to get down the stairs, let her in. And I think I peed straight wine. I was like, here you go, like, good luck. So that was a bummer. And then I had one that was a new company, and I expected it to be my normal lady. So I was like, oh, hey, Tina, how's it going? And it was a new lady, and I was, like, super mad the whole time because it was a different person watching me pee.
Well, I'm curious about that and sort of like that whole entire process. Like, have you had any point where you're just like, oh, you know, sit down, we'll watch a show together and that kind of stuff? Because it's like right now, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
I have to go in like an hour or so.
I've had plenty of those. We had a person come on the day after Christmas, and I was on the treadmill running. So, like, you've already taken care of everything before you start running. I'm like, you guys are going to be here a while. Like, I'm sorry. We watched a NCAA basketball game during March Madness in our basement with the group. I've had just people hang out the house for a good stretch of time.
I did see that this question was sent in by, like, someone was just, and because you mentioned the NCAA tournament, what is, like, your favorite all-time sports moment that is not running or track related?
Chargers going to the Super Bowl, but okay. Not the actual Super Bowl. Like, that was miserable. That was a horrible game. But, like, I'm a Chargers fan. I was when they were in San Diego. And, like, when they made it, it was, like, that was so cool. And then they played and just got shellacked by the 49ers. I remember watching a game where they went to, like, double or – it was like the last overtime, but they kept missing field goals. It was Nate Kading kept missing field goals, and it was just like, this is the worst. Like, it was the worst sports moment ever. So that's like the two polar ends. But I remember watching that game. Like, Chargers games will affect my mood Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so I'm actually very, very pleased that they moved to LA and I don't have to care anymore. Like, I got time back. But yeah, like, I was really into that. Philip Rivers was the man. Like, I feel bad for that guy.
Well, I'm kind of curious with, you mentioned mood and mood swings, mood changes and all this kind of stuff. When it comes to whiskey, like, it could be day of the week. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like, does that change what you're sort of in the mood for, or like where you are in terms of a training block and you just need to decompress? Like, when it comes to whiskey, how different is it?
The moods. I mean, I would say temperature plays in more than like,
really? Okay.
Day of the week. But like, if it's like, it's pretty gloomy here today, and I would go for like this, a typical Woodford, or a Booker, something a little more spicy. It's like Thanksgiving feeling. And it's like warm and comforting and cozy. The championship selection is very spring-like. It's like citrusy and, I don't know, it's like uplifting, right? So that changes more like by temperature, and we have a pretty decent collection. So it's like, you do get to pick by your mood, but I can see also, I guess, like, I wouldn't pick up Booker's on Monday through Thursday. Well, today's an exception, but like, we're going to go on Friday and have the Booker's, and it's, you know, it's 127 proof. So Saturday we can sleep in. If that makes sense.
When Ryan came in here, the comment section like lit up because it was like, yeah, he did ask some great questions about sort of like someone who is a wine person and they come into the whiskey side of things. What was it for you? I guess, like, what is the extent that you've gotten to? You've mentioned like celebrating with champagne, but wine, beer, what is your favorite in that, in those categories?
Oh, goodness. I like to sample everything because it's just like trying it and kind of figuring it out. I don't really have a go-to in the wine or beer category, or sorry, the champagne category. Wine, I gravitate towards red, and then, like, you know, that's pretty wide open from there. Like, I'll try anything and sit down and socialize over it. Beer, I like IPAs a lot. Like, I'm tend to go towards those. The hazies were really good for a while. And then they got a little too rich. And then you have too much of those heavy IPAs and you're just like, dude, I want a classic, like a, you know, like a Sam Adams 76. Like, we'll have 17 of those because I'm sick of the syrup. And then you go back to the, like, the Rebel IPA or whatever it is. So it's, and that's totally predicated on the weather. Like, what am I doing? Am I going to have a porter in the winter because it's nice and I'm in front of a fire, a stout, something like that. And then in the summer, you're like, no, I need like something really, really drinkable because I might session.
What's like the, I guess like the, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on this, but like the shit, like drinking experience that you sort of you've had where it comes to just like, oh, I'm at a frat party, I shouldn't be here. Like, I'm drinking Natty Light. Like, this is the worst. Like, that kind of experience.
Yeah, dude, that's like college, right? Mickey's 40s.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Warm by the bottom. You're like, what was I thinking?
The keg that you paid $5 for? Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a bad idea. And I've had, like, kind of funny story. In Boston, the year after I won, it was like 2 days before the race, hanging out, grabbing a burger in the Oak Room, just hanging out with friends. And like the people in the hotel, like, know I'm there every year and they're super nice. They know I like bourbon, so whiskey in general. So they send out this like really, really nice whiskey. And they're like, here you go, Mrs. Linden. Like, we thought you would really love this. Like, 2 days before the race. I'm like, I can't have people bringing me drinks right now. So I take a sip. I'm like, thank you so much. And then I have to give it away. Like, that's a negative experience where you're like, I really want this. Like, is it weird to take it back to my room for 2 days?
Wait, so what is your sort of like rule when it comes to alcohol before a race? Nothing for 2 or 3 days beforehand or what?
No, I mean, even in
was
that,
like, Paul Radcliffe was like a glass of wine the night before, right?
Yeah, I've had beer the night before. I usually do that, like a light, like particularly in Boston, you have like the 26.2 brew, and you're like, this is like 4%. We're good. It's fine. but like a glass the night before, fine.
All right. Other question I asked my guests, and I know you love their podcast.
Yeah.
What is the meanest thing that you've read about yourself on letsrun.com?
You know what's funny about that site is that, like, nothing that's said isn't something you mentally, like, have said about yourself when you're feeling really, really bad about yourself. So it's not like, I don't really find them that mean. I'm like, yeah, no, like, my ears stick out. This is a bummer. Like, I look like my dad. Whatever. What the meanest things to me are, like, there's a lot of insiders there that pretend they don't use Let's Run, but then very, like, conniving and meticulously use it to disrupt really awesome things going on in your career. It's like, oh, you're having a moment, or you're in negotiation for something new, and I want to disrupt that. So, like, people who are savvy to inside stuff that try and disrupt, to me, are the meanest things, because it's very, very personal. You're like, you're just a bad person. Yeah, and like, I don't even know, like, specifically, but you're just like, like, what are you doing right now?
I think the way you described it once, it was like, it's the part of my take of running. It's a great way of describing it, like their podcast in particular.
yeah, no, for sure. And like, they can just kind of rant and the whole thing, and it's fun. There's a lot of really good inside stuff on there. And those guys do a good job just talking about the sport in general, as do you guys. And there's just some really diehard people that you're like, I gotta listen to their podcast because I love running as a fan. And so those are the handfuls, the Sidious and the Let's Run and so on and so forth.
I saw a comment that came in, and this is a good one, actually. Have you been watching the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance?
I wish I had. I haven't been watching them. I'll have to catch up, like, in bulk. But we've been watching Billions, so I mean, there's any consolation.
No, I think Brian Kopelman, I think, might be a running fan, because I know he follows me on Twitter. For some extent, there's some sort of connection there, and he's, like, the writer for it. But here's a question, then, sort of off of it. Michael Jordan documentary is 10 parts. And it's one subject and a story told over, you know, 10 hours. What running story or documentary would you like to see told in a similar fashion? Because nothing, it's Michael Jordan. There's nothing that's worth 10 hours in running, but maybe three parts or something like that. What is a documentary you'd like to see made from running in that fashion?
Yeah. I think you could do 2001, the big three in their careers, you know, Alan Webb, Ryan Hall, Dathan Ritzenhine, like, that's my era, and I just found them so fascinating. Like, you could for sure do three, and you could probably stretch it out into the pros. And then I think another one would just be the rise of U.S. women's distance running, because there's at least 10 people that are worth digging into and telling their stories in that, particularly in the marathon, I think.
Everyone's debating it right now, but of those big three, who had the best career? Yeah. Ryan Hall, Dathan Ritzenhine, or Alan Webb?
We were talking about that in the run today. I would take Ryan Hall's. I would take, you know, lights out. Good. Like, the marathon mattered to me, and so, like, I know how special those performances are. Anytime he signed up for a race, you knew something special could happen, and it could be just, like, electric, like, it could change the sport, so you tuned in that. I love that. I just thought the stuff he did, like, was always racing over his head, so I'd go run home.
Ignore this ringing that is going on. It rings every hour. All right,
that makes
if you
sense.
Could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, assuming they can hold a nice conversational pace with you, they don't have to be a real person, they could be a fictional character, who would it be, and where does this run take place?
They have to be able to keep up?
No. They can keep up in this hypothetical.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So I always pick Joan Didion.
Okay.
I love her work. I think it's fantastic. Did you know she almost did a autobiography of Kobe Bryant?
No. What? Really?
That was like on the table for her to do, which would have been incredible. Yeah, I just think she would have fascinating stories. I would do California, just like up the coast, because it's beautiful, and that would be a really big conversation starter for us. So,
is there a particular, I mean, sort of on that note, like you mentioned Kobe, but like, is there a particular athlete that you like really tried to study or just sort of like really admire the way they've gone about their career outside of running and the sport?
Yeah, I grew up playing soccer, and this is super random, but Michelle Akers was like the woman at the time, and it was before people really were into soccer and particularly women's soccer. And then when they did get into it, it was like Mia Hamm, Mia Hamm. But she was like an icon, just this powerful, strong player who had so much skill and was a student of the sport and so on and so forth. And yeah, she for me was like who you looked up to, you know. It was like she dominated. She just was ahead of her time, I believe. I'm excited for the Netflix documentary on that team. That'll be cool.
Yeah, no, I think it's gonna be great. And I'm glad that they secured the rights to it. Who is, and this is kind of like, I know you've been on Part of My Take, but it's sort of like very early on, they would ask this question to all their guests. They would say, who's the most famous person in your phone book? And so I'll ask you that. But then all, at the same time, like, who is the most accomplished runner outside of everyone has Meb's phone number? it's like, who's the most accomplished runner that you have in your phone book?
Most famous? It's probably Darren Rovell. I would say that.
Really?
Yeah. Can't go much deeper.
He's got the followers, but he's not that interesting.
I don't know. I'm not sure who. I don't have a lot of famous people. So like maybe Josh Cox. He was on The Bachelor.
What stories has he told you about being on The Bachelor? He's tuned in right now, so this is gonna be great.
Yeah, I mean, he gives a lot of background on like the setup for the first date or like the first like meeting where they just like keep you in cars for a really long time and like feed you alcohol. They're like, go in there and do some entertaining crap. and then like just how it's really, really manipulated and handled along the way.
You don't watch The Bachelor?
No. I mean, like, no.
Is there a reality show that we could put you on? Like, because, I mean, during this quarantine, I've been rewatching Survivor. I'm pretty sure I want to try my best to go on Survivor season like 43 or whatever they're on. But for you, like, is there a reality TV show that we can get you on?
I would go Amazing Race.
Really? And would your husband be your partner on it?
Hell no.
No?
I would go with my sister.
So when it comes to like those challenges where you have to like throw yourself off a building and all that kind of stuff, like who is the one doing it?
Natalie, not me. Like, this is your time to shine. Like, I'll do the endurance stuff. You just be physical.
I think we could easily get you on the Amazing Race, and that's the crazy part.
That would be amazing. We should lobby for that.
All right, next question I've got. It's the question I close out all my interviews with. It's not running related whatsoever, but you get 25 shots from half court. If you make one... you win $25 million. If you don't make any, you go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
100% chance. Like, you should see me lift weights. Like, I can barely lift a basketball.
What do you bench?
I don't. That's my answer. I don't bench.
Dez, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And first of all, I mean, for teaching me so much about whiskey, for people tuning in to just see me just not be able to hold my weight in alcohol, this has been great.
Super fun. And I hope we can meet up in real life soon and actually share a glass and cheers, dude.
Yeah. All right. So one more. What are we doing? We've got, if you've got one more glass for the night, what are we doing? Is it Booker's? Is it Screwball? Is it the Woodford Reserve?
You know what? I'm going to go Screwball because I can really load up on that.
Who is like the coolest person you've bought a drink for? Is that a question that like I guess people ask?
Ooh, that's a good question. I try not to buy them.
I know you're usually the person that people are buying drinks for, but like, I'm sure. What has that happened? Like at a weird place where you're just like, oh, you know, I'm on a beach, and all of a sudden, some random runner who happens to be there bought you a drink.
No, never. I don't think so. I can tell you a weird story. I'll close it out with this if you're ready for it. We were in India. I was with my sister. It was post-race. It has nothing to do with drinking, but it's like one of those moments where you're like, we have this cool expedition planned. We're going to go out in the desert. We're going to ride camels. We're going to have dinner. And then they drive us back to the hotel. And we get out there, and it's in the middle of nowhere. Not a single person in the world knows where we are. And there's like 10 dudes, and we're like, this is a disaster. So they start like making dinner or whatever in the middle of this desert. And the guy starts just chatting with us, my sister and I, and he's a runner. And he's like, I won, you know, like some recent marathon in India. And we start chatting about the marathon. I'm like, okay, this guy's cool. Like, we're fine. This isn't going to go awry. But it was like runners are everywhere and they can appreciate what we do. And it was the first time I bragged about myself. I was like, I was on the US Olympic team. Like, don't kill me. We're good, right? And he was like, oh, I won the Beirut Marathon. I think that's what it was. And it was like this connection. And so I didn't buy him a drink. He didn't buy me a drink. But there was a bond where I was like, we're in the middle of India. No one knows where we are. But we're okay because this guy's a runner.
So that's awesome.
That's all from me for this episode of the show. Thanks to Dez for sitting down and catching up. A shout out to Brooks for setting it all up and helping create a cool concept that we can hopefully do for some other future interviews. If you listened to this and enjoyed the episode, give us a shout out on your Instagram stories. We will repost it to all our followers, and that helps new people discover the show. And if it's not asking for too much, why don't you consider dropping a nice little 5-star review on Apple Podcasts? What that does is it helps us get closer to Joe Rogan on the top charts and eventually snagging our own $100 million deal from Spotify. And who knows all the cool things that we can do with $100 million. In the meantime, support the podcast by picking up some swag at sidiousmag.com and hitting the merch tab. We've got crew necks, t-shirts, tank tops, on all different lines, whether it's Sidious Mag, Runners of NYC, or Legs Are Feeling Good. Show your support. We actually just re-released our Sidious Mag Track Club line, so we've got some t-shirts, some hoodies, some crew necks. Check it out, sidiousmag.com, and hit the merch tab. It's also in the show notes. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Don't forget,